This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
I'm Stephanie Schomer, Deputy Editor of Entrepreneur Magazine. Joining me for this week's episode of How Success Happens is Jacqueline Johnson, founder and CEO of Create and Cultivate, an online platform and conference series that helps women build their ideal careers. Jacqueline and I talk about her recently released book, Work Party, which looks back on her bumpy road to entrepreneurial success, from losing her first big job to dealing with her own imposter syndrome. But first, a word from our sponsors. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially for small businesses. You don't have the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations, and old-school payroll providers just aren't built for the way you work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. PC Mag and Fit Small Business have called Gusto the best payroll for small businesses. It makes payroll a breeze. In fact, 9 out of 10 users say it's easier to use than other payroll solutions. Gusto saves you time. 72% of customers spend less than 5 minutes to run payroll. Gusto is also reliable. 4 out of 5 customers actually reduce payroll errors after switching to Gusto. Don't believe it? Just Google them. People love Gusto. And how often do you actually love your payroll provider? Most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With great software and great service, you can focus on your business, not payroll and not paperwork. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service for your team. To help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive limited time deal. Sign up today and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/HSH. That's gusto.com/HSH. And now for our second sponsor. Now the NFL season is here, I look forward to Sundays to wind down before starting another busy work week. Of course, my friends are always trying to get me to bet on games. The truth is, I don't know who's gonna win. But if you think you do, you've got to check out MyBookie. MyBookie has been in business for years, and they have great customer service. Who you're betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. MyBookie has in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for fantasy players, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now, and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Here's how to do that. Visit MyBookie today. Then, when you're creating your account, use the promo code SUCCESS to activate the offer. That's MyBookie and promo code SUCCESS, SUCCESS, to get a dollar-for-dollar match on your deposit. MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining me today. It is always a treat to chat with you, but I'm especially psyched because I just finished reading your brand new book, Work Party, in which you pretty much outline your own path to success as the founder and CEO of Create and Cultivate. The book is packed with brilliant takeaways and tangible tips for building a business, but it's also full of honesty. And your road to success was filled with plenty of speed bumps, as most are. When did you first start working on this book, and what did you really want to accomplish with it?
Yeah, so I started working on the book last year, probably at the end of the summer, and you know, it was really interesting because when I kind of sat down to write it, I mean, the first thing that came to mind was all the amazing advice that I'd heard at the Create and Cultivate conferences from like amazing women. So I initially started with that. And then what I found was the topics that they were hitting and sort of navigating, I had my own personal anecdotes for. And, you know, really just talking to the women around me and kind of asking, you know, what are you looking for in terms of a book? And I think across the board, women were saying, you know, I just want real talk advice. Like, not just like the glowy, be yourself, you know, you can do it, be authentic type of advice. I really wanted the advice of like, here's how you start a company. Here's how you run a business. Here's how you negotiate. Here's how you ask for a raise. Here's how you do all these things. And here's my experience in doing it. And so I really just thought my story of, as you said, speed bumps and failures and all sorts of stuff really played into the narrative I was trying to tell anyway. So The book is broken up into three different kind of categories. One is my story. The other is tangible advice from amazing experts. And the third is, you know, the stories of women I admire and had heard speak previously.
Great. Well, to that point, let's go back to the beginning of your career as an entrepreneur. Like so many of our listeners, I'm sure, you went into business for yourself partly out of necessity after you lost a job that you had moved across the country for. Talk to me about that experience.
Yeah, so that was brutal. But essentially, you know, I was moving up the ranks in corporate America in New York, was transferred to Los Angeles, was excited to keep, you know, building my career, and then obviously got laid off and let go, which is a really, you know, crippling experience, both personally and professionally. And it was something that I was struggling to recover from until I eventually, you know, sent that email that you send when you're looking for work, just like, hi guys, I'm available for hire. And, you know, was lucky enough to have some business leads and, float in and start, you know, rebuilding what I thought was going to be a freelance career until I was able to just get my next job. But it turns out, you know, I ended up creating my first company from that experience, no subject to marketing agency. And it's interesting because it was just, it never was set out to do that. It was just freelance work that got too much. And then I hired an employee and then started the business. And it really wasn't the plan, but sometimes, you know, the best plans are unmade.
Did you kind of wake up one day and find yourself taken by surprise that you were running a business that just kind of evolved organically?
Yeah, I mean, I still wake up and think about that. I mean, none of my businesses had business plans. They all were driven by momentum and demand and excitement and obviously like sheer enthusiasm and will on my end. And so, yeah, I mean, I think it's always shocking when you wake up and you realize people like what you're selling or doing or providing. And, you know, you got to keep going and kind of just keep your head above water and keep your eye on the prize.
Totally. One of the things that I love that you addressed repeatedly in the book was the idea of imposter syndrome, which is something that a lot of people experience, but especially women and especially young women. And when people question your skill set because of your age or gender or whatever, it's very easy for that to creep into your psyche. And you talked a lot about feeling that way when you were starting out. Is that something that you still from time to time deal with all these years later and after you've built this empire?
Yeah, I mean, definitely starting out, it was obviously, you know, especially because my first business, I was 23, and so many people would roll their eyes or, you know, gasp at the prices I was charging or whatever it might be. And now I would say, you know, less so, obviously, just because I'm older, I'm wiser, I have more experience, all those things. But yeah, of course, I mean, I think sometimes people, you know, I'll still have meetings with people that are, you know, call my company cute and call my business ideas, you know, adorable. And like, that still happens all the time. And you know, it's really just about, you know, having the numbers and the skill set and everything to back it up. And, you know, the reality is that it's unfortunate. It's a learned behavior. It's systemic. And, you know, sometimes it's not even their own fault. But, you know, this happens quite often, especially with, you know, older men in power and who have privilege in that specific business. But I do think, and I have to say, in the past couple of years, it's gotten better. And, you know, I walk into a room now and definitely have, you know, the respect I deserve. And you know, obviously the conversations have changed a bit.
You had actually some amazing stories about how you did get people and clients to give you and your young business a chance in those early days. And they made me laugh out loud. And there are things that we've heard some variation of from a couple folks before. But one that I loved was that you know, kind of endorsed pretending to be your brand's publicist when you don't have the money for a publicist. And I think you said you guys hired friends to sit at desks in your office to show a potential client that you had a robust team. What's the line between those kind of like scrappy embellishments to get you to the next step? And when does it become a kind of an ethical gray area and a little bit of a problematic lie?
Yeah, totally. I mean, look, like the word hustle is very real and like you have to sometimes pull things together just by sheer will and sort of circumstance. And the story I tell in the book is that, you know, I was with this client. I knew I could do a good job for them. I knew we were going to do amazing work for them. But, you know, they wanted to see our offices and meet the team, which, of course, if we won their business, we'd be able to hire that team and bring on the people that we needed to. But the reality was, is I knew we could do a good job at this. And so you know, I joked that we hired people to sit in desks, so it felt like a more robust office. And we won the client, and they ended up being a client, you know, for several years. But the reality is, it's part of the business of entrepreneurship is smoke and mirrors to an effect. I mean, the reality is where I say, don't get yourself in a pickle as if, like, you, one, cannot take on this client, and you don't have the bandwidth or the skill set. You know, if someone's like, hey, can you build me a website? And you're like, yes, and you can't, obviously that's a problem. But if someone's saying, hey, can you take on this marketing business? And you're like, I can, and actually the retainer you're going to give me is going to allow me to make that next hire to free up even more of my time to focus on you, then that I understand. And I think it's just about being strategic and smart. But also, you know, the reality is people want to know where their money's going and how it's being spent and who's behind it. But you got to deliver on the goods, right? Like, so you can't just say these things and then not do it. But, you know, I think there's so many amazing stories like this. And it, like you said, there's so many variations. But coming to mind is, you know, Sarah Blakely, like, putting her Spanx at the front of the register at Nordstrom, like, or whatever it was, and kind of getting that attention. And a good friend of mine, you know, Bobby Hundreds, who runs The Hundreds, which is a huge streetwear company, told me a story about how he was at one of the big fashion trade shows, and, you know, some brands deck out their booths, like, hundreds of $1,000 bills, and they just had a dinky little booth, and he ended up throwing over a tarp over their rack and just said it was all by appointment only, and all of a sudden every buyer was like, wait, I want to get an appointment. How do I get an appointment to see what's under tarp? And you're just like, these are so genius, but these are moves built off desperation, need, and drive, and they work sometimes. You know, you got to get creative.
Totally. It's amazing. So you did a crazy thing while you were working on your first business, which is you started working on a second business, which is, of course, what eventually would become Create and Cultivate. Why did you do this to yourself? Because even reading it, I was like, she's so, like, I can feel the PTSD of juggling these two worlds.
I also got married that year and remodeled a house, so I'm a full-blown masochist. It was a lot. And it honestly wasn't anticipated. You know, I think what really kind of happened to me was my employees essentially came to me and were like, which company do we work for? And that really opened up my eyes and realizing these are two very solid businesses and I need to start treating them as such. And then as such, hire separate teams and start building the businesses separately. And again, you know, in my mind, you know, as sort of a skeptical entrepreneur, I was like, well, we'll see which one works. And when both of them worked, I don't think I could have anticipated that. And it was really, really difficult. And it was really hard. But at the same time, I was very fortunate to have two growing and thriving businesses, two incredible teams supporting me. And it really just came down to me making decisions on where that next step was going to lie.
When you did first start working on Create and Cultivate, did you think that it could potentially grow to what it has become or even a sustainable business? Or did you kind of think it was more the thing that would remain a little bit of a side hustle? Because it certainly doesn't sound like you approached it thinking that it would turn into two separate thriving businesses.
Yeah, absolutely not. Especially for the first 3 years. I mean, I was really thinking of Create and Cultivate as a, you know, lead gen for my marketing agency, like a great way to meet influencers and entrepreneurs and also businesses that could potentially be clients. So I was thinking of it more as like brand marketing, more so than anything else. And really, you know, year two is when the momentum hit. And, you know, it's one of those things where I couldn't ignore it anymore. And people were really excited and wanting to be a part of it. And then we were selling tickets and then we had to have customer service. And then more brands were emailing and brands that I had emailed, you know, previously that would never respond to me were starting to respond to me. And so all of a sudden it was like, I need to pay attention to this. And then I really took a step back and said, okay, if this is going to become, you know, taking up more of my time, more of my team's time, how can I look at this as a scalable business, as a business that will actually make money, not just as like a marketing initiative for my other business? And so that's when I really separated out the two companies. You know, I implemented a new business model and started bringing on different team members.
Great. Create and Cultivate it's such a multifaceted business. When you were starting to, you know, solidify it and create a separate business model for it, in your mind, what was that white space that you guys had figured out how to fill that so many people and companies wanted to get involved in?
Yeah, so I think it was twofold. I think the first part was there was no real online platforms at the time that were looking, feeling, and speaking to millennial female founders or millennial entrepreneurs or women in business, right, that were of the younger generation. I think, you know, there was a lot of institutional knowledge, but not necessarily applying it to this new type of entrepreneur, obviously, like focusing on like the fast-moving world of social media and, you know, all these sort of young companies. And so that was part of it was I didn't find anything that really spoke to me. And I was like, this is interesting. thing, we should create it. And obviously, having gone through the ups and downs, I wanted to share that story. The second piece was really the fact that all of the offline experiences for consumers that I had attended that were conferences or for business or for design or for whatever it might be were really awful. Like, the contents were good. Like, the speakers were good. What you were learning was good. But the environment wasn't built for social. It wasn't built for inspiration. It was just like you're in a hotel conference room and you're eating a crappy sandwich, but you're hearing an amazing speaker, but you're just like, I have nothing around you that's inspiring. So I wanted to create events that were socially native, that were digital first, right? So having no event experience, really, like, I kind of was a self-taught event planner. I just wanted to create things that I thought were a really great experience that I'd want to share with my friends and family on social media. And so I really applied that model of, hey, let's create something that people are going to want to take 1,000 photos of and share, but also back it up with the amazing content, you know, best-in-class speakers, and awesome food and drinks and shopping and, like, all these fun things that women love, too. Is, you know, I was of the impression I was running a million-dollar business. I also like fashion and to shop. I also pay my taxes. I also buy cars. Like, I wanted it to be multifaceted and approach women, modern women, in a way that wasn't just so flowery and pretty, but also have the real tech advice to kind of round out the experience.
I mean, that's so reflected back in the speakers that you're attracting. I mean, in the past year or so, you've had everyone from Kim Kardashian to Julie Rice and Elizabeth Cutler, the SoulCycle founders. That kind of success obviously takes help, and you talked a lot about how building a team is also no easy feat. Because of the nature of your work and how it's kind of, you know, it never ends, right? How have you built a team that can support the business that you're building?
Yeah, totally. So when I'm hiring, I'm looking for a couple different things. It's like, number one is people who can wear a lot of hats, right? So you have to hire people if you're a small business, especially we're self-funded, where it's not I'm the marketing coordinator, so I'm only going to work on marketing and I'm only going to wear this one hat and think about it this way. And that's my one job. And I'm going to show up at 9, I'm going to leave at 6, and like, that's the way it's going to go. I hire people who are diehard CNC fans, who understand and love the business, who are like, I care about the way that cocktail napkin looks. I care about the way that social media post looks. I care about what the consumers think. I care about what our sponsors think. I care about the entire experience. So, you know, I always joke, but I'm like, it's basically like we're throwing a wedding every 6 months. Like, we have to care so much about the details. And so I'm lucky enough to have found employees that not only are great at their, you know, designated role, but are willing and able to jump in on every facet of the business. Like, the words, that's not my job, do not exist within our company, and just honestly can't to move at the pace we need to move and to deliver on the things that we need to deliver. So, you know, we are a team of, 10 women that are putting these things together. Obviously, we outsource where we need to, but, you know, it really is the blood, sweat, and tears of the people behind the company that care so much, that are really wanting to be a part of it. And, you know, one of the lessons I learned early on was, you know, previously when I was interviewing people, you know, I was trying to sell them on the company and sell them on, like, why they wanted to work for us. But now I really approach interviews in a completely different way, where I'm almost like unselling them on the position, where I'm like, here's the things I'm going to expect of you. Here's an example of a time when things got really hard, and really laying out the expectations of what you want them to know is part of the business. I mean, one of the things that's a perfect example is the fact that we host events, and a lot of the events are hosted on weekends. So, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, you just have to be prepared to give up Saturdays. And like, if that's not something you're willing to do, that's totally fine. It's just, this might not be the position for you. And luckily, we've been able to find people who are gravitating towards that kind of startup, scrappy, environment, and are willing to put in the work.
I loved in the one chapter when you talked about work-life balance that you mentioned, like, this business that I have, like you just said, it's weekends, it's nights, it's, you need to show up when we need you. Have people, when you've expressed that in interviews, do you have people who kind of balk and like you don't hear from them again? Like, has it actually been effective in weeding people out? Because I also, like, you guys are such a like amazing, coveted brand that people do have very, very strong favorable feelings to. So has that been effective in weeding people out, or do they still kind of just, you know, say what you want to hear to get to the next step because they're so in love with the brand?
Yeah, I mean, I think people still, in the room, people will say what you want to hear. After the fact is a different story, which is totally fine. I get that. But we have had people say, you know, loved it, loved meeting you, loved being a part of this, but I just don't think I'm at the place where I'm willing to give that much up. totally fine. Like, and I always like, you know, kind of say that in interviews, like it's a choice and it's not, there's no right answer, right? It's just the type of environment you're looking for. Like, even if I wasn't running a company, I know I'd be that kind of employee. So it's really just about, you know, being really honest about like the expectations of the business and obviously the kind of business you are, you know, going into it. So, you know, and it does, it weeds out people. And I think we've done a really, we've got a really strong team in place now that is amazing. And honestly, new people coming into the mix, you know, they rise to the occasion. So it really is about, you know, kind of setting those bars early on.
Thinking back to the earlier days of when you first became an entrepreneur, you mentioned multiple times that there were certain things that you wish you had maybe done sooner or better, particularly with respect to lawyers and accountants and kind of those not sexy things that are required to operate a business. Can you talk a little bit about some of those things that you wish you had known going into it? Because I think that's so much of the advice that gets left on the cutting room floor in a lot of coverage of startups. And I just really appreciated, like, I did feel like after I read the book, I was like, oh, I know more, so much more about what I would need to do than I did a few hours ago when I started this.
Oh, good. Well, that makes me super happy. But yeah, I mean, like, I was always, previous to starting the company, I was the creative. I was the social media strategist. I was putting together the fun campaigns. Like, I was not the business person. I was not the finance person. I knew I got a paycheck every month, and that's all I knew. You know, I wasn't really looking at, you know, the numbers and thinking through how much is coming in, how much is going out, how much is our overhead. I wasn't thinking about that until I had to think about it, and I was forced to think about it after, you know, I broke up with my first business partner, and really, you know, the bricks came tumbling down. But the reality was, I honestly had to teach myself about the financials and the sort of inner workings of running a business. And I joke, but I YouTubed a lot of my education, you know, everything from QuickBooks 101 to, you know, invoicing, understanding P&Ls and how they work. And, you know, really just had to teach myself everything I knew. And it was one of those things where my mom's an accountant, and I joke and I talk about her as I was like, oh, my mom will handle it. But it was one of those things that early on I didn't take seriously. It's like, everything's going to be fine. We'll figure it out. We never in a million years thought our business would get so big, so profitable, and be making real money. And then obviously when real money comes into the situation, things get difficult and can change very quickly. And if you don't have the legal structures in place, the financials in place, and obviously clear expectations and outlines of what each person in the company is responsible for, things can get messy very quick. And the reality is no one starts their company thinking they're going to be a $1 billion entity and want to talk about what's going to happen when they take on capital investment, when they break up as business partner, when they need to hire, fire, you know, grow, sell, whatever. Like, no one's thinking about that. You're just trying to survive. But the reality is you have to think about like the divorce before the marriage. So I think early on is think as big as possible, you know, don't limit yourself and spend those additional dollars, even if you're dying when you do it, to hire the lawyer, to get a strong operating agreement in place, to get all your financials handled, and just to have everything as buttoned up as possible. Because the reality is if you don't, it will come back and bite you in the butt.
That's very solid advice. And then the last thing is, we hear over and over from people that entrepreneurship, especially for solo founders like yourself, can be a very, very lonely world, which is why this network of women you've built through CNC is so exciting and valuable. But I also really appreciate that it seems like you have your own really tight, amazing network of fellow female entrepreneurs whose own successes you've referenced today and also regularly highlighted throughout Work Party. How vital has it been to just your like emotional health to build that own support system of people who get what you're going through and can relate to what you're experiencing?
Yeah, no one gets it. It's one of those things where, you know, like I'll try to talk to my husband about it, or I'll try to talk to whoever about it. Unless you're in it and doing it, like no one will understand where you're at. And I still have dear, dear friends, entrepreneurs that, you know, when something goes wrong or, you know, whatever it is comes out, will text me and just be like, oh, I saw that. Are you okay? And the reality is that's so important, because entrepreneurship is super isolating and really lonely when you're a solo founder. And the reality is I don't have a mentor. I know a lot of people who don't have mentors. And so my mentors are my peers. So I can call up a Allie Webb or a Laura Fine or, you know, the Ellen Bennett, like women that I love and admire, and ask them for advice. I'm like, hey, okay, so here's where I'm at. What would you do in this situation? How did you handle this? Or, you know, people come to me, hey, who do you use? Who's your CPA? Who's your accountant? We're all sharing the secrets. I mean, this is essentially what the boys club has been for generations. Just now it's women and we're here and we're able to support each other. And the reality is, you know, there's this big ethos around CNC, but the, you know, collaboration over competition. And I think the narrative of women pitting women against each other and there's not enough room for everyone to be successful and we all have to, you know, fight to the top is like no longer a thing. You know, I think women are really coming together and understanding like there's more power in joining forces than there is in being apart.
Awesome. Jacqueline, thank you so much for joining me today. And as always, I hope to talk to you soon.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.